Hey everyone, this is Danny from Psych Woolwich, and you're listening to House of Noise.
Welcome to House of...
All right, you just want to do it? Go.
Run with it. No, you do it. It's your turn.
All right, welcome. And you are listening to House of Noise here today on this wet and rainy...
You go full radio.
...Sunday. Yes, I do. Because that's what I'm used to.
Podcast.
And I think it sounds good.
You just talk.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk in my radio voice, so...
I'm going to talk in my radio voice.
That's such a pie hole.
You shut your pie hole. Obviously, the quarantine has gotten to us, and we're fighting all the time. No, I'm
Yes, we are.
No, we're not. Shut up. Shut your dirty, filthy mouth.
You go back to Whore Island.
I will. I like it there. It's warm. Well, we hope everybody's staying safe, and hopefully by the time this comes out, things have started to open back up. And we're hearing words as of right now that things are going to be opening up soon.
Yes.
So on this episode, we talked to Danny from Psycho Village.
Psycho Village. No, I'm just kidding.
They are over in Austria.
Austria, yeah, I love it. I'd love to go over there and see Austria.
Vienna, Austria, I believe.
Yes, home of Vienna sausage. No, I'm just kidding. Don't know. That's even true.
You but saying crazy crap like that makes me have to do a lot of editing.
Listen, leave it in because it's funny. It's comedy. Anyway.
It might actually be where Vienna sausages come from. We don't
right. We don't know. But I wanted to put that in there as a misnomer. Anyway.
Need to fact check that.
Right, yeah, fact check to people. Google it. We're not going to. We don't care. anyway, we talked to Danny from Psycho Village and on their new album, Unstoppable, their new LP, and about their video, Unstoppable, and just, you know, interesting tour stories and how much they've been through as a band. Yeah. And
hopefully we got some information out of them that isn't in every other interview. So, you know. We do our best to bring you, you know, stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else.
Right. Well, I think his dad was pretty smart in introducing him to rock and roll at the age of 13.
Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, GNR, baby.
I like the fact that he said that he thought that was the biggest band. That was the pinnacle. That was the top.
Yeah, top of the charts. Top of the pinnacle of a really decent band.
A really decent band.
An awesome band. The best band in the world. So
they're good in their own right. How's that?
They are very good.
And I think that's
right.
What he alluded to.
Yes.
Saying, you know, I got into more music, and it's not that they're not good or great.
Why are you criticizing what I say?
Listen, I'm just trying to say that he found other bands and realized they were great in their own right, but there's other great music
sure.
out there.
Sure. All right. Yes, dear. Okay.
Oh my gosh. I'm flipping her off right now.
Right. The bird. Ca-ca, ca-ca. So it was just, he was a really nice guy, and I enjoyed chatting with him. I enjoyed learning about Psycho Village and just, you know, his approach to songwriting and how influenced he was and is by some of the bands they've toured with. And just the neat experiences, you know, he co-managed some band, he books bands. I mean, just really kind of learning about his background and his preference as far as gear and how they move things around. You know, just very interesting in learning the hows and the whys and the whats of Psycho
Village. And hopefully they'll be in the States soon.
Yes, they were supposed to be playing at the Machine Shop 3 days ago, and Rona ruined it.
Well, they're supposed to be touring with Smile, Empty Soul, and Trapped right now.
Yeah,
so if you had tickets to those shows, make sure you check out Psycho Stick or Psycho Stick.
Psycho Village.
Make sure you check out Psycho. Make sure you check out Psycho Village.
Yes, Psycho Village is amazing. Their song Unstoppable is out right now. Check it out on YouTube. Check out some of their other tracks on the album. You can go to their actual page, and you know they're going to be releasing a video soon for their second single. Not sure when.
It'll probably be out by the time this gets published.
Yeah. Anyway, I want you to check it out. And, you know, like we said, if you want to go to our House of Noise Facebook page and give your opinions, please do. We'd love to get some feedback.
And you can leave us a message on Anchor.
You
if you just go into the description and you click leave a message,
You can leave us a message. We really appreciate message. That. Feedback is important.
We also don't ask for money, but you can also donate money to us, too.
You can.
We're kind of poor. So.
We are very poor because of Rona. Damn Rona.
Not that poor, but we're, you know, every little bit
we're
helps.
We're starving artists, okay?
It helps us to keep
Let's
doing
Let's be real. What, Let's be real.
Helps us to keep getting new equipment, bring you the best content.
Best quality best show and best content.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, enjoy the interview, folks, and until next time.
Bye.
Exactly. Bye.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to House of Noise.
Hello, this is Danny from Blackwood.
Hey, Danny, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Of course. Of course. So how are things going with the pandemic? How are you guys doing?
We are all right. Restaurants just reopened yesterday, I think. It's slowly getting back to normal. And yeah, I was lucky to have sushi for the first day restaurants reopened. So it's slowly but surely getting better, yeah.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Here in the States, we haven't quite gotten to that point. We are still doing like carry out and stuff, but, yeah, hopefully we'll get back to normal too, but it's good to hear that you things are starting to happen for you that way.
Do you like your sushi cooked or uncooked?
Well, raw fish, but I like any kind of sushi. So, I like all of that stuff. So,
I only just recently tried sushi and I only had the cooked version. So I was just curious.
Yeah, you mean with like grilled fish and stuff like that?
Right. Yeah, I think I had tuna and I don't remember what else I was. I had a whole platter full of it.
Yeah. No, for me it really depends on the fish or like what kind of fish it is. So, okay. But yeah, I'm up for any sushi.
I love sushi. So I wanted to ask about Unstoppable first, the official video you guys have up for the track. Who produced that? Because the video is quite interesting with the effects and stuff.
Thank you. I did the concept and I produced the whole video.
Okay.
And we shot it throughout touring in Europe of the Unstoppable record, because the CD or the album has been out in Europe since late September. Where we could find cool spots and had like a day off, we tried to finish filming it. And yeah, it basically was filmed over the course of almost half a year. So we're happy that it's finally out.
Yeah, I really like Unstoppable. And I have to say it's very, very catchy. It's probably, I would say it's a great song to do live, especially. I'm sure it's a song where people catch on and they could probably sing it.
Thanks. Yeah, we have great live reactions. Like that song and the song called It's Okay from the new record are the two that have like the best audience feedback, and people tend to sing along the first time they hear it, which is a great sign because, you know, you if you don't know a song, you can't really sing along to it unless you can connect and it's kind of catchy. So that's a good sign. And Unstoppable is basically the main and core message and song for the whole record, and kind of sets the theme for the entire record. And I always do like a little speech before we play Unstoppable, because that's kind of the song that, you know, is very dear to our hearts and kind of represents all the stuff that we went through the past 3 or 4 years leading up to the release of this record, which has been lots and lots of ups and downs. Like, we're kind of infamous for having bus issues. Yeah. Our tour bus was on fire once or twice.
Oh my gosh.
We had a big car crash in Germany 2 years ago when we toured with Puddle of Mud.
Yeah.
We were carrying Puddle of Mud's backline and a car crashed into us in the side when they tried to overtake us, flopped the trailer over, like total damage to the bus and to the trailer. And we still made the show and luckily no one was hurt, but like all the gear was spread over three lines on the German highway.
Oh my gosh.
We were robbed we were having breakfast in the UK and the housekeeper instead of making our beds, broke into our room and stole like all the touring money we had.
Oh,
Jesus.
And you know, all of that kind of stuff went into the record, and that's kind of what the whole Unstoppable theme and that song represents.
Now, do you guys still get anxious whenever you go into a bus now, knowing that you have such a reputation with bus issues Like, does that come up whenever you guys get ready to get on a bus? Like, all right, here we go again. Let's see what happens.
Well, to be honest, not really, because you know, if you think about how many miles we travel, you know, on average, it's probably the same with any other vehicle. It's just that since we travel so many more miles than the average person, obviously we have that many more incidents, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, luckily the bus didn't burn down. It was just a little like cable fire. But, we have bus issues every once in a while. And there's like one minor thing every tour. But, you know, considering that we're traveling like 10, 15,000 miles for every tour and we do like 4 to 5 tours a year, it's still all right. And we didn't have that many major problems the past tours, like a window cracked once for the last tour bus we were on, but that wasn't our fault. It was the drivers. And we had to swap buses because it had an oil leak. But, you know, as long as we managed to get to the show, it's still all right. And as long as we still have a ride in the vehicle.
Right.
It seems like you guys have a lot of fun on the bus, too. We watched your video of the tour of the tour bus.
That was hilarious.
It was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, certainly. That was a cool video. We had like a 10-minute gap in between the headlining band finishing and us having to go to merch, you know, meeting fans and signing stuff. So we had like this 10-minute gap and like grabbed the support band and put them on the bus, told them like do funny things. And I literally, we didn't have a camera guy, so I literally grabbed someone having a smoke outside the venue. I was like, do you have 5 minutes and do you want to see the tour bus? Can you, can you film us? And it's like, yeah, sure. So I was just like, just follow me and, you know, follow whatever I do. And yeah, that was the quick five to 10 minute one take tour bus video we did.
Well, I love the crescendo of the video when you go to the back room and he huffed and he puffed and he blew me away.
Yeah.
So I love the diversity. I love the diversity that you have in this album. I mean, it's not just, heavy and hard. It's, they got some slow stuff in there too, and there's lots of different tones to the different songs.
Mm. I mean, we just try to, first and foremost, I try to write songs that I personally want to hear myself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not writing songs for the sake of, or for the purpose of having a song that sounds this or that direction. Mm-hmm. I just want to write good songs and then hopefully have songs that, kind of fit together within one album. And also the goal was to make a very diverse record, because I personally don't really like records where you have 10 songs and, three of them are ballads, which are the singles, and the other 7 songs kind of sound like they wrote the same song 7 times.
Oh, yeah.
So we tried not to do that, and I tried to, I tried not to rewrite the same song twice and always have something, that's a bit different and diverse to the song before, yet still kind of trying to have a similar sound so it fits together. I think we accomplished that quite well, because we have very, very heavy rock songs.
Yes.
We have Broken Hearted, which basically is a pop ballad, and then we have songs like Unstoppable, for example, that's kind of like in between. So I feel like it's very diverse, and there's a lot for every fan of every music genre, which also translates into the bands we tour with, because we tend to tour with very heavy bands, but then on the other hand also tend to tour with a lot of like very soft pop rock bands, and it kind of like we kind of translate to both audiences, which is great.
Yeah, I'd say nice.
I'd say it definitely lends to the, not everybody listens to this same type of music over and over and over. I mean,
yeah,
we have diversity in our lives too, so.
Yeah, yeah. No, we for example, we toured with a band called The Raven Age, which is a British band, which is the band of the son of Steve Harris from Iron Maiden.
Okay. No shit, really?
So they have a huge Iron Maiden fan base, because it's the band of Iron Maiden's son.
Right.
And we didn't think we were gonna, stand or be able to, play and perform and stand in front of Iron Maiden fans, because Iron Maiden is one of those bands similar to, AC/DC, Metallica, Guns N' Roses.
Right.
Those fans really just want to see their band, and they don't really care too much about the opening acts, right? But we played some shows where we sold like CDs to 60% of the audience. I'm not even joking.
Oh, nice.
Because those were smaller shows. That tour was like an average like 150, and we had nights where we sold like 100 CDs.
Wow,
that's awesome.
That was just crazy. And then on the other hand, and that was like a very heavy tour. And then on the other hand, we toured with The Calling from the US, mm-hmm. you know, which is mm-hmm. like this big pop rock brand from the 2000s. And the same thing happened, you know, the soft songs translated to the mostly female audience. And then the few heavy songs we put into the set list translated to all the boyfriends that were just there to, you know, watch their girlfriends and, you know, go with them, which is also cool because, you know, I've talked to a lot of guys there and they weren't really there for the headlining band because, you know, it's like it's a very female-driven show and concert, which is fair enough. But right. yeah, we were able to find, you know, company in both worlds.
Yeah, that's nice. That is nice when you can go and do a show and your set is diverse enough where you can
play with anybody,
catch pretty much anyone, and yeah. you can kind of get both sides of the coin. And you know,
well, that helps with booking touring too. Mm,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it definitely opens a lot more doors than, you know, just this one avenue that you can right. run down. You know,
yeah, it tends to be a bit tough with media because you know they always want to label you, yeah. with you
oh my God,
in a
yes.
category. And then we have a lots of reviews where it's basically a pop review and they criticize us being heavy. And then, you know, the heavy, like the more heavy media is criticizing the more soft things. But I feel like that's more like a problem, you know, media and people who write reviews have, because we don't really experience that issue when we go out and tour and play for people. It's like everyone seems very open-minded to find something they like. It's just, you know, certain people that, you know, have their labeled opinion and have the opportunity to write about it, sometimes don't really understand that. But personally, I don't really care because, you know, in the end, it's all about the people and the fans that like the music and not about critics or whoever's, you know, writing about you. It's not like I can buy anything because I have a great review.
Right.
Right.
But I can if I have 100 people at a Raven Age show that really like me. So that's more important.
That's really, really nice and interesting. And I have an issue with labels myself because I really think it pigeonholes you into a specific area and it's really limiting where there's no label, the sky's the limit. You can go wherever and do whatever.
Yeah, you know, I have the mentality, it's like if something fits a song or has to, you know, if a song asks for something, be that if it's a heavy song and it's, you know, it asks that you scream on that, or it has like a hip hop vibe and you could put like a rap thing in there, I feel like you should kind of go with that and go with the flow and try it at least. And if it sounds great, it sounds great. But I don't feel like that, you know, if a song is meant to be a piano ballad, you shouldn't put heavy guitars on it just for the sake of having heavy guitars because that's your label. Then, you know, try it. To write a piano ballad if that's what the song asks for. And there have been a lot of bands that, you know, in the grunge scene, for example, that were known to have like very guitar-driven music, and then there's this beautiful ballad, but you have a distorted guitar the entire time just for the sake of. Right. And I never really understood that.
Right. I was going to say, too, with not limiting yourself and writing, you know, music you want to hear, I'm sure that really helps with the songwriting process because you can pretty much write however you want to as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the challenge to, you can't do completely polar opposite things.
Right.
It still has to, you know, fall within a certain, you know, it has to have a certain sound to fit together. But within that, you can experiment a lot and, you know, push the boundaries.
Definitely. I had a question about the fact that you have two labels. You have Pavement, and then you have mm-hmm. 7 Us Media Group.
Yep.
Is that because you can get more of a reach both on the international side and, you know, on the European side of things?
Well, you know, if you're not signed to a big worldwide major label, but you're signed with, you know, a reputable indie label, like for example Pavement, mm-hmm. and also 7us in Germany and Europe, it just makes sense, and that's my experience too, that these labels obviously focus first and foremost on their main territory, mm-hmm. which for Pavement it's the US and for 7us it's Germany, so it kind of makes sense to have one or someone representing you in each of the main territories that we're in. Because, for example, if we just went with the European label, we probably wouldn't have the backing in the US and the other way around. So, yeah, when we signed with Pavement, I think back in 2018, late 2018, we decided just to go with them for North America because that's the main focus, that's the main expertise. And then half a year later, we signed to a European label for the European market, and you know, also separated the two releases, and then also having the tour, the two album cycles and touring cycles to, you know, have a focus on every territory the way it's meant to be and the way it deserves it.
There hasn't been any issues between the two, or you don't have to really worry about that.
No, not really. I mean, we released the record in Europe in, I think, September 27th or something, and then did just under 100 shows in Europe and the UK to support that. And now, obviously, a month ago, we released the record in the US, and we were actually meant to be on tour right now with Trapped, yep, the Calling, and Smile Empty Soul, and Tantric. But, you know, due to COVID, that's not happening right now. But hopefully that's going to be rescheduled to a later point.
Yeah,
but
you were supposed to be out.
Yeah, the original plan was to, you know, spend like 9-10 months touring Europe and UK, yeah, then release it in the US and do the same amount of touring in the US.
Gotcha.
Yeah, you were supposed to be here in Michigan, 3 days ago at the Machine Shop.
Yeah, which we could have went and seen you. And I'm so sad because that would have been really cool. But darn Rona. Yeah. And hopefully you guys will be able to reschedule.
It's such a bummer because the Machine Shop is such a legendary venue. Even being from Vienna, Austria, we know that venue. So having the opportunity to play that, that was big. But unfortunately, it wasn't meant to be right now.
No, we know you guys will be back though, for sure. Have you been to the States before?
Yeah, I've been to the States twice. Flew in for the first time to actually sign the record deal and meet with some people, and then I was there last year, met with some bands I'm friends with, met with Rick from Adelita's Way, in case you know them, met with Alex from The Calling, some other agents, and also a little vacation. That was fun.
That, I have to say, you, very interesting story about meeting Billy Sheehan from the Winery Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was funny how you met him, and the closest thing you had for him to sign was a pencil case.
I didn't even remember that I ever said that in an interview, but that did actually happen. I was, I think, like 12 or something, or 13. But that's been a long time ago. Yeah.
Do you remember like him as, you know, as being approachable, and did that make an impact on you as far as, you know, if I were to be?
Yeah, certainly.
You know,
I mean, obviously in that age, I don't recall how old I was, but I was, you know, younger than 14 for sure, like 12 or 13. And I was very nervous. I just wanted to have him to sign my stuff, and then I actually had to go back to school because that was like a school exhibition or something. I don't exactly remember, but I feel like no one actually knew where like the signing booth was, so I was literally the only one there, and I thought I'm wrong. And I'm in the wrong spot, and someone's tapping on my back, and it's Billy Sheehan. It's like, are you here for me to sign your stuff? And I'm like, yes. I couldn't even probably speak English probably. Nice. So, but he seemed very nice. He seemed very nice. He approached me and not the other way around. But, you know, I feel like it's important. In this day and age, I feel like people shouldn't pretend to be the big rock stars and, you know, having that much of an ego. I feel like that's all right for the big bands of the 80s and 90s, because that was their whole image.
Right.
That's what they were all about. And, you know, with the size they are, you know, they deserve to be. But in this day and age with social media and everyone, you know, being so approachable, I feel like that kind of should translate into how people behave and how they are. Because in the end, we're not curing cancer, you know. We're making music. Right. We're trying to have fun. We're trying to entertain people, and there's nothing wrong with being nice, approachable guys, you know?
Right.
Exactly.
And that's the way we try to be. We're there before the show at the merch desk and have a drink with whoever wants to have a drink with us. And then we're there after the show until we have to leave and talk with anyone who cares to talk to us. So, and I feel like that's very important. That's very important, these tasks.
Obviously, you said you were 12 or 13 when you met him. Well, how long have you, you know, known that music was something that you wanted to pursue as a career?
I feel like, well, as a career, who really knows when they're 12 what they want to do for a living? But in primary school when I was like, I don't know, like 8 or 9, my dad showed me that Live from Tokyo DVD from Guns N' Roses.
Oh, yeah, nice. Yeah.
And I do remember that. I felt like that's kind of, I think that's cool. That's what I want to do. And I, at that point in time, I was like, Guns N' Roses is the best band in the universe.
Yeah.
And there's no one could be any better. So trying to be better or trying to write original music, there's no point in doing it because you can't be that good. So I'll just be a professional Guns N' Roses cover band. That's the limit you can reach.
Yeah.
And obviously things are very different now, but
yeah, right.
I do remember thinking that, yes.
Yeah. Have you ever been able to meet like Slash or any of the members of Guns N' Roses, especially being a guitarist?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, we've toured with a lot of our, you know, hero bands and met many people, including like Wes from Bottle of Mud or
nice.
The Calling, Nothing More, Sick Puppies. So a lots of bands that I grew up listening to, but Guns N' Roses, you know, is another level. And no, I haven't had the chance, unfortunately.
Well, maybe one day, right? You can only hope.
Sure, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, with some people, you know, that whole don't meet your heroes
mm-hmm.
thing, I feel like that's true to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to push it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't want to find out that someone I really look up to is kind of a douche. But,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That happened before. I'm not going to say who, but, you know, some people are a certain way.
Right.
But, yeah, so with the big, big names, maybe I'll try to stay away and, you know, just enjoy
right.
it for what
sure.
I think it is.
Sure.
So was Dad the one that really got you into music then?
Yeah, he was the one showing me all the records, explaining me what's the difference between a studio and a live record. And that his opinion, a live record is better because, you know, you have more feeling to it.
Right.
And that kind of stuff. And then obviously, in my teens, it evolved and I discovered new bands and new music that I never thought was possible. Like, you know, more heavy metal stuff that he didn't show me because he was more into like the classic rock stuff. It just evolved from there. And, you know.
You mean there's more than just Guns N' Roses out there?
Yeah. Well, I was really into Deep Purple and That kind of, you know, I'm not sure if that's what you call the classics, but you know, the important bands of those time periods.
Oh yeah, right. That's definitely classic rock. You can call it classic rock.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Well, I guess classic rock kind of changes with the time.
Yes, it does.
With the time you're in, because that's the conversation I had with Alex from The Calling during the tour, and he was like, you know, it's funny, wherever you will go, it's still an important hit to this day, and it's still being on radio. Mm-hmm. But can you imagine that your song, in my song, or that's what Alex is saying, so his song next year is going to be on classic radio, classic rock radio next year.
Oh, that's
wow.
crazy.
But that's like a song from 2001.
Oh,
and
wow.
Personally, I don't feel like that stuff in 2000 and 2001 should be labeled as classic rock, because
yeah,
I have a whole different
not.
Opinion what classic rock is, right?
Yeah, that's
that's coming back to the labeling thing. It's kind
right,
of
exactly.
tough to do
exactly.
it, right?
Yeah. Definitely. There's another band that you toured with that I actually got to interview Benji Webb from Skindred. What was that experience like?
It was great. He stole one of our t-shirts.
That sounds like Benji, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He just one day he just walked past the merch booth and was like, thank you, and just grabbed the t-shirt. I'm like, all right, I'm not going to complain.
Right.
Please wear it on stage. Send me a picture if you have a word on stage so I can use it for an advert or something.
Yeah,
right, exactly.
They were very cool. They were very cool. We just did two shows with them, but very cool shows, very nice guys. Everything was very cool.
Yeah, they are really nice guys. Benji is a character. He's definitely you know, your typical front man for a band.
He is a persona and he has a look to himself.
Yeah, he does.
Sure.
He does.
And he's a very nice guy. I didn't have the chance to talk that much with him, but you know, the few conversations we had, he was very approachable and he was very nice.
When you do your shows, when you know you've been touring and you've toured with bands, do you get a chance to watch their set and maybe get some takeaways that you'd like to try, you know, musically or something during your performance, you know, maybe at the next show or whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, we watch at least every band we tour with, we watch at least once. And then obviously, if you're on tour with the band, like we did 52 shows with The Calling in one go.
Wow.
So that was a huge tour. Obviously, you don't watch the same band and the same set every night because you also have other stuff to do.
Sure.
But we sure watched their set like 10, 15 times. And for example, touring with Nothing More, I watched their set every night because I love that band so much. And, you know, you try to take away what you think is cool and make it your own and try it yourself and get inspired.
Didn't you manage a few of the bands that you've played with now?
Oh yeah, well I'm also an agent professionally, so I booked a lot of tours. I did two tours for Puddle of Mud, obviously now The Calling. I did a tour for Sick Puppies, and I was also co-managing The Calling for a while last year, trying to find a label for them. Some of those bands I worked with OTAP, with Saving Abel. That's all of their European tours. That's what I did.
Oh okay. I have never seen an OTAP performance. Is she pretty intense OTAP? As far as a performer? Yeah, OTAP.
She is a character for sure. That's all I'm going to say for that.
That's okay. I can fill in the blanks.
Right.
We may or may not have had our issues.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying.
I know.
Yeah. The band was really nice. The band was really nice. I'm still big friends with the guitarist, Ari.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I have a gear question because, you know, you being a guitarist, you know, when you first started playing, did you start with the same brand of guitar? And have you changed over the years? And what brand do you prefer to play?
Right. I mean, for the past years and basically ever since I started playing in Psych Village or with Psych Village, I've always been using PRS guitars, and since 2 years now I'm actually endorsed with them. Okay. So they sent me a free guitar to a sold out show in London, you know, which is a dream come true in some way, because that's definitely been on the bucket list, because PRS with Shinedown and Alter Bridge and all these bands I've looked up to, playing Paul Reed Smith, you know, that was a big goal. I think when I started playing electric guitar, I just bought like a cheap Ibanez to get started playing, and then at some point my dad gave me a Gibson Les Paul as a present for a birthday or something. So yeah, and then I played Gibson for like my teenage years, you know, trying out different bands, but I've swapped to Paul Reed Smith very, very fast.
Oh okay. Have you ever tried to play a 7-string?
I actually have not. I think I've tried it once in like a music store, but I've never really felt comfortable with playing 7-strings for some reason.
So what was it that drew you to that guitar or that brand?
My favorite guitarist playing it, so it's got to be good, right? So, and then at least you think it looks cool,
right?
And then you try it on, and then, you know, with every guitarist and every character of a guitarist that they are, a certain guitar fits to them, right? I couldn't imagine, for example, Slash playing a Schecter or something, right?
Oh, exactly, yeah.
So a Gibson fits to Slash, a Stratocaster fits to Pink Floyd, and that kind of stuff. So I always thought PRS fits very well with how I look like and how I dress. That's a big part, right? It's not just about sound, it's also about the look.
Exactly.
Well, you have a little bit of a guitar collection, don't you?
I do. I had a bigger one, and I tried to sell off a lot of them. At some point, I had like 25 guitars.
Woo!
Or something.
What?
I'm trying to get it down to 10.
Oh, okay.
So I still have to sell like 2 or something, and then I'm down to the important instruments that I actually play. Because it got to a point where you can't play 25 guitars. You can't take 25 guitars on tour with you unless you're a huge, unless you're Slash or someone, right?
Right.
So I think an instrument should be played. And then if you look at that, you know, Gibson Les Paul that your dad gave you when you were 14 and you haven't touched it in 3 years, it's kind of sad. So I tried to sell off all the stuff that I hadn't played in a long time.
What was the hardest one to give up?
None of them, because I kept all the important ones.
What's your most important guitar?
I have a, but I hardly play that. It's just so cool that I don't want to sell it. I have a Gibson Les Paul Custom from 1979.
Oh, awesome. Nice.
So that's a very, very old one. I guess it just gets, you know, more valuable when the years go by. So I kept that and I don't plan on selling it. I didn't sell it for the money. I just sold the instruments that I didn't play,
right.
You know, to have them played because I don't feel like a guitar should just be hanging on the wall and not be touched in years.
Right. Do you, this is kind of just a curious question. Do you have names for your guitars, your favorites that you keep?
I actually don't, no. I know that there are guitarists and bass players out there that name their guitars. I never did that. And no. I never felt like that's a thing I want to do, no.
I'm just curious. My brother-in-law, every time he gets something technical, he always names it. So I was just curious.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I didn't name... Back when I still played with tube amps, I did name my tube amps. Mm. But just for the reason, I had a... I still have them. I had a Mesa Boogie triple rectifier.
Okay.
And I had two of them. You know, one as a main, the main thing, and one as a backup, and then it was just permanently in the rehearsal space. So I just put name tags on it to, you know, because it's the same thing twice to know which one is which. But I don't really play tube amps anymore. I'm playing all digital amps now.
Oh, okay. Now, this is also an equipment question, because I always wonder, when you're playing internationally and you're coming over to the States, how do you guys get the equipment over here? Because I'm sure, you know, you don't want anything lost in transit or damaged, and I'm sure it can be kind of expensive to...
Yeah. Well, we've heard of other bands that just rent equipment while they're here, too. So, I mean, I guess that depends on how big you are, too.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't toured the U.S. yet, so that still has to be figured out. When we tour in Europe, we have our own bigger RV camper tour bus. It kind of looks like the thing from Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay.
It's a bit shorter, but that's pretty much a good description of what we usually travel in with when we're not in a big tour bus with a headliner band.
Yeah.
And then we just bring all our gear, but it's very minimal. We just have the drum kit and cymbals, and then Max, our bass player, has two basses, and then I have two guitars, and we both have our digital amp, and that's basically it.
Gotcha.
The thing that's actually bigger is we always bring production ourselves. We have video projections during the show with two big screens left and right of the drum set, so that takes up more space. But we always bring that ourselves, and it's like the three of us can still carry it, you know, without having someone else carrying stuff. So
right.
I think we still have to figure it out for the US, but we're probably just going to ship the guitars over, and since we're just with digital amps, that's also not that big. And then I guess we just have to buy a drum set over there.
Right. I'm sure, you know, sometimes I know I've seen it where bands that are on a tour, if something, you know, if they crack a cymbal or if something goes on with their equipment, they'll use the other band's equipment, you know, playing in Europe and stuff. Have you guys ever had to do that, or everything is, you've been able to utilize your own gear?
Yeah, you have enough spares.
Let me think. Sometimes when touring just for stage space, obviously you share a drum kit either with the headliner if you're lucky, or at least with this, if there's more than one support band with the other support band. So we usually do that, but usually it's our drum kit that's been used, because most of the time we're special guest or main support, or however you want to call it. I think one or two times we forgot a certain part of the drum kit, so we had to borrow that off another band to be able to actually put the drum kit up. That did happen once. But yeah, no, we're usually just relying on our stuff, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
Forget my guitar once.
Oh, did you really?
That's been a long that's a long time ago. I was 15 and we were just playing locally in and around Vienna.
Oh, okay.
And we had that show where we thought it's going to be this big open air show in Vienna at some whatever youth club or something. That's a long time. That's like 10 years ago. And since it was in Vienna and we had sound check at like 2 and stage time was like 11 p.m. or something.
Oh, wow.
So we had a long, like many, many hours in between till we drove home, because we live in the same city. So we set up, do the sound check, go back home, and then 1 hour before stage time, we come back and I did forget my guitar back home. And I literally realized when I was just about to go on stage, because our gear was there, the drum kit was set up, the the amps were set up. But yeah, I did forget my guitar back home. And I was running around the other bands that were playing because it was like a 10-band lineup or something. And half the band had left at this point. And oh, I found one other guy, and he didn't want to borrow me his guitar because he was picky. And then the other guy was like, yeah, you can use my guitar, but it's left-handed and only has two strings. Oh, I was like, what the fuck am I going to do with that? So we got hold of this like shitty... like $50, you know, Walmart guitar or something.
Oh, shit.
That you can buy, where you can buy a set with an amp, a cable, and a guitar for like $80 or something. Mm. So one of those guitars, but it didn't have any strings on it. So the band was starting to play because we were already like 10 minutes over. So they were just jamming bass and drums, and somehow I got hold of strings, so I restringed that guitar. We did a set, and it's like 8 people watching us, so it didn't even matter. It was really bad. It was really bad. And we played that show with a drummer that we hadn't rehearsed. That was the keyboarder from like back in the day. And he knew the songs, and he kind of could play drums because our drummer had left. It was a weird time, but yeah. That's the version to that story. Yeah.
You ever hold that in the back of your head when you're getting ready to leave? Like, do I have my guitar?
Right.
Yes, I know I have my guitar. Okay, I'm good.
One thing that actually happened, and that was kind of embarrassing. Because we were touring professionally back then already. Oh, we had a one-off show in Salzburg, which is like 4 hours away from Vienna. So we just drove there for the one show and drove back after the show. And I had sweatpants on and I forgot my jeans. But like big, wide, huge sweatpants, you know, comfy ones.
Right.
And I didn't realize I didn't bring my pants. So at one time I forgot my pants back home and I had to play a show.
Oh, God.
With huge sweatpants that almost fell down like every other song, and I always had to, you know, pull them up again.
It really sounds like you might need a checklist just for these occasions. But I think you pretty much these are all like a while ago though, so
yeah.
I'm sure that you've definitely managed. And
that's been a while. I've gotten better over the years. That stuff didn't. We tend to forget. You know, I mentioned that we run big stage production with video screen stuff. We forgot the videos. Well, it's the projection screens because it's with video projectors, but the screens that we project on, we forgot those screens twice at shows. Actually, 3 times, I think.
Oh,
rumor has it maybe alcohol was involved.
So. Oh, maybe. Well, I heard you guys' drink of choice is what? Jack Daniels, right? What else do you guys?
We do like that.
What else do you guys like to drink?
I like what the German or Austrian term for that is Spritzer. It's carbonated water mixed with white wine.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Whatever you call that in the US,
because we call it seltzers here, right?
Yeah, that sounds about. I've heard of Spritzer before. That sounds. Yeah, I think we would use the same.
Yeah, that's what we drink in Austria a lot because, you know, it's not a heavy drink. It's kind of lighter, but you can drink more until you're very wasted.
Yes. I am a wine connoisseur myself, and I do like to add a little, like, carbonated wine water to my wine a little bit. Because wine, depending on the brand you like, sometimes it can be dry or kind of sweet, so you kind of want to thin that out a little bit.
Yeah. And it's also very accepted. It's also very accepted if you drink that. It's like if you're there in like have lunch or something and have a Jack and Coke, people might look at you as if you're an alcoholic. But if you have, you know, a Spritzer, that's all right. Because, you know, that's generally accepted in Austria. Probably not in other countries, but that's why we drink it.
Gotcha. I will keep that in the back of my head if I ever decide to make a trip over there.
Yeah, we'll try it. You can also put like syrup in it and have like raspberry syrup, and you know that would be like more of like a summer drink, but or like, you know, any syrup you can have and just mix it, and it's more of a sweet note.
I'm gonna have to try that. Thank you.
Well, definitely when you guys get up here, though, I'll treat you to some Michigan whiskey.
Awesome.
Michigan's got some really great whiskeys.
Yeah, we do. We do, for sure.
I think that's what whiskey is mostly known for in the world. There's like Scottish whiskey from your area.
Yeah, I agree. I want to go back to songwriting and the music end of things. You know, looking back at your EP in 2013, The Self-Made Fairy Tale Part 1, and then looking at Unstoppable, your LP now, have you, you know, as a writer, sometimes you come up with riffs and maybe they don't fit what you're thinking about at the time, but maybe at some point you go back to them. Have there been any riffs where maybe you've put them on the back burner and you've kind of rewrote them, or maybe they weren't that great when you first did it, but you know, you come back to them and you're changed them slightly?
When we released Fairy Tale, that was actually in 2014, the main riff for a song called Shine On Us, which is on the new record, I had that back then already. So I had kind of the intro you hear on the record for Shine On Us. I had that when Fairy Tale was released. I just wasn't able to finish writing the song, for example. So that took a bit longer than when the EP was released, but obviously it made the Unstoppable record. And then Broken Hearted, which is that the main ballad on the song, I had the chorus for probably even before I founded the band.
Oh, wow.
So I did have that chorus since I was like 14.
Oh, okay.
And now 11 years later, I was able to finish writing the song, and it did make the record. I just never was able to finish writing the verse. And I'm happy that I waited that long, because the lyrics in Broken Heart is actually my favorite lyrics on the whole record, especially the second verse. It takes some time sometimes, but if you allow it to take time and don't force it, sometimes you're lucky and actually write a good song.
Very cool. Very cool. So, you know, you have the official video out for Unstoppable.
Yep.
Being that, you know, the virus has kind of done the social distancing and stuff, and they're really encouraging people up to this point to stay home and not go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Have you thought what single, you know, what you're going to release next? Maybe do another video, kind of, you know, have you guys talked about this as a band? Like, where do you plan on going from here at this point?
We actually have a video finished and ready to go for What Was That? Which is going to be the next video and single. We don't know when it's going to be released yet, because we're still pushing Unstoppable and it's been going good. I think it has the most views we have on a video so far. It's just under 150,000 on YouTube and rising every day. What Was That is going to be the next one.
Okay.
And probably within the next 5 or 6 weeks, it's going to be out, hopefully.
Very cool. And then I know, you know, you guys want to get over here and tour the States.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, are you just kind of waiting to see when the new normal happens and when...
You guys are just waiting on Trap to give official word, right?
Right.
Yeah, at this point, we're just actually waiting, you know, to have, you know, something official where everyone knows when you can tour again. And then we'll start rethinking about when we're going to... and what opportunities we have to come over. I mean, we're still friends with a lot of bands in the US, and hopefully they're going to do us a favor and take us on tour with them, because the tour with Trapped and the calling didn't happen, obviously.
Yeah, hopefully.
But yeah, we're still hoping and trying to come over. And I'm in talks with Rick from Adelaide Sway. I'm in talks with our head PE and some other bands.
Nice.
And hopefully some of them will be kind enough to take us out on tour.
Very cool.
Where is the best place for people to go if they want to find your merch or download the music?
You can always just message us on Facebook or Instagram. We kind of just run it through that, to be honest, because we like to be in touch with the fans and talk to them and that sort of stuff. So, yeah, just hit us up on any social media, send us a message, and you can get a signed album. We still have plenty of those. I'm happy to send those out. We still have some of the tour T-shirts left, and you can just find all the pictures of the different, you know, merch stuff we have on Instagram and Facebook. So, yeah, just hit us up.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on and taking
the time to talk to us.
Oh, no worries. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Definitely.
We hope you had a great time talking to us, and we're looking forward to you coming to the States at some
point,
because we definitely want to catch you and, you know, meet up in person and actually talk that way too.
Hopefully, man. Yeah, stay in touch, and hopefully talk to you soon again. Yeah,
definitely. Well, take care, enjoy your Sunday, and we'll keep our eyes out.
Thanks. See you too.
Thank you. And we wish you guys the best of luck.
Yeah, stay safe and healthy, and hopefully talk to you soon.
Definitely.
Bye-bye.
Bye.